The Around the NFL Podcast has its swagger back.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
All right. Happy hump day.
Killed All me. Right.
Sessler going on about 3 hours of sleep here.
Still here, still operating, still turning out content.
Sessler, Wes, and I all went to the Flock of Dudes premiere in downtown L.A. It was a fun time had by all.
Now you're making me look like a jerk.
Well, you know, it is.
You didn't even mention it to me that you were going. I guess it was on the podcast last time.
It was mentioned.
Yeah, it was very clear.
We didn't get there until after 10.
Mm. We enjoyed ourselves. We met at Around the NFL listener. That was nice. Mm-hmm. Mark, his name was?
I actually didn't speak with him. You guys did. But he seemed like a very nice person. What was his name, Wes?
Wes?
JC or something. He was a nice guy. I don't
very
know.
Nice guy.
Probably not JC, but it was nice to meet him. He was a good guy.
So that was cool.
Great story, guys.
Yeah.
Sad I missed it.
Excellent story. So that's what's going on, and we have a big news. TD is back with us behind the glass. I think that's why he chose the money drop that the swagger was back. I mean, reading between the lines.
Not at all. I'm not the type to just overload the show or production elements that has anything to do with me being back. I don't do that at all. It's not how I roll. You know? Not how I get down.
All right.
Glad to be back, though,
this
guys.
Was the song, the moment that Eminem just never was the same after this. So maybe it was fitting that you chose this.
But thank you for using a pop culture reference 15 years old, because that works for all of us.
It does.
That's all we
appreciate it. And there is – Sully has now been demoted back into his Jimmy Garoppolo backup role, and you can see it on his face. He's a little sad. TD, I would be careful, because Sully was getting a little comfortable in that chair.
We're a team here, guys. We're all a team, and we all know that we have roles to play, and it's all about playing
the
role.
The best part is that that TD doesn't realize or pretends not to realize that he's in a Viper den.
Nancy Kerrigan thought she was Tanya Harding's teammate,
right.
too.
Sully's going to have some under-the-radar 2001-level Drew Bledsoe backstabbing, just trying to get Tom Brady out of the chair.
A little tease, you know, three shows this week before, Mark, you go on vacation. Tomorrow's show, we will bring back the game Skill and Valor, Win Wes's Toaster. We have our contestants locked in. The aforementioned Sully did a great job doing some cat wrangling there. So we have our contestants.
The scripted entertainment of Skill and Valor.
All right, Greg. You know, it's been an award-winning segment.
Who's given any awards?
Best of iTunes. The Stitcher.
We were a
major award.
We were a finalist, I believe, for that.
Well, let's
Put a banner up.
Put a banner up, finalists. So, yeah, that is on tomorrow's show, so get excited for that. Wes has a lot of confidence after dominating the last time around. Today's show, we're going to get to a lot of news. There's a lot of stuff to get to as mini camps. A lot of teams are in mini camps right now. This is the last week before the NFL goes dark for a six-week period ahead of training camp, hypothetically speaking. So there's plenty of teams to get to. I think 21 teams are in camp right now.
25.
25 teams in mini camp. So we'll go through some storylines out of there. Also, since there are so many teams practicing and we're starting to get our first looks at some of the most recent draft class, we will do a little rookie whisper. I almost stumbled over it because Greg put together the budget today, called it Rookie Buzz.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the name of the article.
It's a lot different. Whisper. So we'll do that. We'll go through. We'll each highlight two rookies that we, have caught our eye, and talk about them in an educated way. A little dash of mirth. That's how we do it here. But before any of that, back to TD behind the glass. TD, you are aware of the code words. There was some controversy that perhaps the code words that I was dropping into earlier podcasts while you were gone to make sure you were listening, that you might have been getting fed the code words. Is that true or false? I'll take you at your word.
Well, let's put it this way. Like Varys, the character in Game of Thrones, I have people that whisper things to me, you know, crows and whatnot. But no, I did listen to the show as much as I could, and I tried to always save them for my flights because I had a bunch of flights. I got tipped off on a few code words, and some of them I heard myself.
And by the way, just so you know,
yeah,
if we get hard evidence that you got tipped off on everything, we will march you through Culver City nude, throwing garbage at you and chanting shame.
By the way,
Game of Thrones.
Do I get a body double?
TD, you got tipped off on a few code words. There were two. So.
Oh, I got tipped off on one.
Okay, so one, not
I actually
not
got
a
tipped off on both, but I heard the other one myself.
Gotcha. It's starting to become clear.
I did like your theory that I didn't actually take vacation. I was just watching the NBA Finals. I mean, the Finals did end yesterday.
There's a lot there.
Back at work.
And everything good with the family in Nigeria?
Great. Fun times. Great wedding for my sister. It was a joy to watch. I got to walk her down the aisle. My father not being there because he's not in great health. He's doing better. But so it was good times.
All right, an honor for you. Congrats. Yeah.
Really, really awesome.
Did your mom say, like, hey, TD, time for you to get married now?
Well, I have
is that how your mom sounds?
I have no, not at all. Not like an Italian dude. No, she doesn't. But it was great.
TD, it's time for you to pick a man. Woman. Getting offensive.
Dan has gone so far afield from reality at this point.
All right.
I did bring that a gift for you guys. You know, it's some British candy, Cadbury Heroes.
Heroes.
That was very nice of you, TD.
Don't
Thank
finish
you.
It, though.
But they're not all for us. You, you made very
all
clear.
For you guys, though. Yeah. Have as much as your heart desires, but not.
Save
all.
Some for the coaches show. They'll be here in 6 months.
Yeah. They're in the process of building the chains that Mariucci and Billick will be fastened to under this desk. All right, let's do some news.
Been cooking with the sauce, Chef Curry with the pot, boy.
Yeah. Shout out to the NBA champions, Steph Curry and the Warriors, and obviously Riley Curry, the real MVP. On the back end of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Steph Curry not getting an MVP vote.
That's crazy.
Somebody else that didn't get an MVP vote last season in the NFL. Johnny Manziel, who suffered through
the transition on you.
A miserable rookie season, as Mark and everyone else that follows football can attest.
Mark clearly doesn't have a vote if Johnny got left out.
Oh, yeah, he would have been my vote. He brought all my dreams to life.
So Manziel has been trying to keep a low key since getting out of rehab. He's trying to put his career back together. He's clearly lower on the totem pole now than when he came into the Browns organization, but he's doing his best to fight back. And on Wednesday, for the first time all offseason, Manziel spoke to the media and, again, preached, asked for some privacy as in terms of his personal life, said that he's doing what he can not to let down his teammates again like he did last year. He owned up to some issues with maturity. And I guess the money quote that people took out of this, he was asked about his signature money sign celebration, and his quote was, "The money sign will not be back," said Johnny Manziel. Mark, we'll start with you on this as I give you the money sign to get going here. Do you buy this, or is this Johnny Manziel saying the right things to get back in people's good graces?
Well, I know I do buy it because I think the first step he took was without being tugged into rehab by someone else, he went under his own power. And from all you hear, that's the first step to growing. And I think listening to him today, he spoke well with the media last year. I think he's savvy at that. So you have to wonder what has changed. It's a fair question. But by all accounts, the people around him say that he's working hard, that he's very focused. And I like that he went out of his way to basically apologize to the Joe Haydens and the Joe Thomases that had to answer all these questions about him and say, I put this on them, and I don't want it to be that way. So what more could he have done? He did a good job today. He's not seeking attention necessarily outside of getting stuck at this ridiculous wrestling event that happened where he was labeled Johnny Idiot Face. I don't know what that was about.
I wouldn't say he got stuck at it. He voluntarily went and
sure,
sat in the front row. But that doesn't mean he did anything wrong.
You go sit in the front row at a wrestling event and you're Johnny Manziel, you're going to be mentioned.
But overall, he's not 36. He's a young guy, and he is showing some signs of growth, in my opinion.
He convinced us last year, though, that he was a mature guy and all that. I totally agree, though. What more can he say? I thought it was smart to apologize to those teammates for answering questions. That's all great. I don't know if his maturity is even, the biggest issue. His football ability is the biggest issue.
Oh, well, that's a whole different topic, and I think that's been completely up and down from what we've heard.
Tuesday, I thought I saw on Twitter that he fumbled 3 out of 5 snaps at one point.
It was 3 in a row, shotgun snaps.
Yeah. So he's obviously a work in progress, and everything you hear out of Baraya,
which Dan has labeled an Indian burial ground.
It's a camp built on an Indian burial ground. But Everything you hear is that Josh McCown is Joe Montana in 1988. Everyone's optimistic this time of year, but people are just glowing out of that camp. They love what Josh McCown's doing. So it seems like there's no way Johnny Manziel is the week one starter.
Some of the whispers coming out of last year was that Brian Hoyer was painted as an absolute angel, was not always the easiest teammate, and McCown has been...
Cleveland Springsteen?
McCown has been a leader, I think, and a veteran, and I think they're pointing to what was not there last year.
When you were in your early 20s with the world laid out before you and dreams of becoming a writer, did you think that someday you'd be penning some tribute to the 70th best quarterback in the NFL no longer making a gesture?
Yeah, I do. It's a fair point. It's funny that we have all these starting quarterbacks talk almost every day, and when Manziel talks, we quickly must get an article up with four other points below it. And it's just like he's still treated as something that he's not. He's maybe the third best quarterback on the team right now.
To be fair, he's one of the most high-profile players to enter the league, someone we were all really excited for. And then he went into rehab after his rookie season, and he hadn't talked for 4 months since. So
right.
This is the first time he's addressed the media in any way.
He's a charismatic guy. He's an interesting guy to see how he answers questions, so it makes sense.
I think my transition from Roto World to NFL media, the one difference that shocked me was that when certain players talk, no matter what they say, you have to write about it. Mm. It's just because they're available and they're speaking.
Well, that's how our site operates.
You signed a deal with the devil, Wes. Welcome to California. Moving on, Dez Bryant told our own Michael Silver recently that it was a legit possibility that he would hold out into the regular season to get a long-term contract. Jason Garrett earlier this week said he wasn't concerned with the contract dispute, basically calling Bryant's bluff. On Wednesday, Dez took to Twitter and had this to say: "Everybody voicing opinions, 13 mil is cool, but where is my security? I'll wait 5 years without complaining, so how am I selfish? Hashtag family one."
What?
I don't know what that
is. What is the family one? You
know, family what? First. Probably ran out of characters.
Let's calm down with the hashtags. Society.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Greg, you were saying?
I wasn't saying anything. I think that the fact that Jerry Jones and Jason Garrett have both now publicly come out and said, yeah, we don't believe you at all, Dez Bryant, is almost surprising to me. Like, they're not respecting him. Jerry Jones spoke today as well and said he loves the game too much. He's not going to miss any football. He loves the money too much, too.
Their stance is a little dismissive and perhaps condescending.
I agree.
They're not helping matters by saying, we don't believe you. And Dez will be here because he cares about the Cowboys. And come on. Now you're putting a lot of pressure on Dez, and it's not fair.
I hear you, but the line, where is my security? The $13 million, that's pretty good security.
More security than I've ever had.
That should work.
Well, except
right?
he's not operating unilaterally. Like, he's got agents and other people in his camp saying, no, you're worth more than this, and we want to put you here, and we're going to fight for this. Right? I mean,
my takeaways from what Jones said, his son, Stephen Jones, on Tuesday, was that the Bryant camp is asking for the moon, and the Cowboys think the Bryant camp is asking for the moon, and they're just far apart in money, and that's all there is to it. That they'll get a contract done eventually, but they're far apart.
I had a debate with Corey Griffin of NBC today that he thinks that Dez Bryant not only deserves to be the highest paid receiver in the game, but will become that shocked me. There's no way I believe that he'll get a better contract than Calvin Johnson.
I think it'll be close because it's been so long since Calvin Johnson signed it in the new.
But he was given a once in a generation talent deal, not a top wide receiver deal.
That's fair.
And I think that he's a model citizen, face of the franchise. Dez isn't those things.
At least we know the Cowboys have never overpaid their veterans before, so it's impossible.
They stopped doing that. They cut DeMarcus Ware loose.
Moving on, the San Francisco 49ers under Jim Tomsula. He said, I guess it was last week, he made a crack about it. He doesn't know what's going on with Twitter. He's not really plugged into that. But then we read an interesting story from Kevin Clark of the Wall Street Journal, who wrote about what the 49ers are doing to get in touch with the millennial generation, that being generally the age group between 18 and 34. The average Niners roster age is 25 years old, so they're doing some different methods in their effort to better communicate. Some options include changing 2-hour meetings to 30-minute blocks with 10-minute breaks, introducing enhanced digital playbooks that help more visual learners by including video clips, getting rid of paper altogether, and sending alerts on phones. Basically, all in an effort to connect with a generation with a short attention span and a deep love of Taylor Swift. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
Doesn't seem that revolutionary to me. Get rid of paper. I thought we were doing that like 20 years ago.
Yeah, the NFL seems like such an old school business that it really is maybe implementing some methods that aren't that aggressive. It's just they're so old school. Chip Kelly was asked about it. He said, we've been doing that in terms of short meetings for a long time. It makes sense.
Chip Kelly, football hipster. Yeah. We've been doing that for years.
That's old news. We're way ahead of the millennial thing. I just wanted to hear, because you guys, the old, I don't know what we would call this corner of the room. Damn,
what did you call us, like reactionary or
well, that was a
something?
Reactionary 40-somethings?
Yeah, that was a different thing. This is more about the crotchety generation.
Crotchety corner?
Crotchety corner.
How about this? I will own up to what I am, but I quietly over the last couple days, when this story started to bubble up, asked, you know, probably 5 to 7 millennial target age individuals, like, do you consider yourself a millennial? Oh, no. Not me.
There's a stink on it, the title.
Well, and there is, and it's not fair because you can't put everyone in that category, but I couldn't find one person that said, yes, I am, and yes, I don't have an attention span, and yes, I need things visually. I mean, not a single person owned up to it.
Well, I don't think anyone chooses. You're either a millennial or you're not. Just when you're born. TD is a millennial.
Who, youngish Kobe?
Yeah.
Wait, what are you guys talking about?
Exactly.
Comes back, doesn't skip a beat.
So we
love the millennials because that's probably 3/4 of our audience.
You were impressed with Jim Tomsula.
I was. Jimmy T doesn't seem like a guy that he's to me. One of the reasons I see him as the guy that's shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic is that he seems kind of old school, like the coach you would have seen pop up in 1991 in the NFC West or something. Mm,
tell the truth, you see him as like Cro-Magnon school.
A little bit, yeah. He seems very old school. Not really a guy you would think in 2015, but. This shows he's sitting in on weekly meetings where people introduce new apps and technologies to him that his players might be using.
That seems
it's a little bit weird. I'm just throwing out the info. At the league meeting, he sat in on a some type of dissertation or a panel in which that was targeted towards youth marketing and teaching people how to connect with the kids. I don't know if any of this means anything, but Jim is making it.
I think it's a little bit of an effort. It's good. It's funny that all of these guys have somebody in the organization who would make sure that they're up on every technology, but as soon as they publicly talk about it, it's, what's this face space or Twitter?
Yeah.
They have to act like they don't know the name of things.
It's a similar type thing. I was saying it to Mark downstairs during this mini camp and OTAs where all beat reporters or on-camera people, and I'm sure we've done it on the same podcast, where it's like, before we announce some stats, like passing stats from a practice, we need to be like, it doesn't mean anything, and it's stupid that people track it. But Tony Romo is 18 for 27 in practice today, so something to keep an eye on. It's like, just own it. Whatever you're talking about, just own it.
Can you imagine Bill Belichick at the weekly meeting of how to use Snapchat or whatever? Like that part, the 30-minute meeting seemed like, really? What? That sounds kind of like the sort of thing that shadowy league figures put upon fine young writers like yourself.
Well, we all go to
corporate
meetings, so we don't want to go.
Top-down things. Hey, Jim, I really think it's important that you start learning about this new technology. That's coming from above.
Blame him, though. I still don't know how to use Snapchat. It's really
I don't either.
What's Belichick can't even set his clock in his car.
I'm amazed, though, that you two guys did not use any rants on millennials that you're usually doing.
Well,
I don't dislike millennials.
Okay.
Neither do I. I mean, we work with them all day. I think it's fun to make fun of them in general, but like
You have in the past at this very office, you've steamed over millennials. So let's not pretend
it's
now.
I think it's more personality type, not age group, because I don't want to go too far into it. I don't think a team trying to figure out how to teach and engage their players
that makes
better
sense.
That does, and I think the team like teachers do that.
Yeah.
Teachers are there like, well, we can't just teach the way we did 30 years ago. And the teams are probably way late to they're way late on this, if anything.
We should have our theology podcast and then also our millennial talk about it session.
Nothing makes me more annoyed than the generation always complaining about the next generation. Oh, well, my generation, you know, we did things the right way. And like,
right.
Here's the thing. It's the most predictable thing in human history. Every single generation ever has ever said it. And yet the next time, every time you get 35 or 40, then you start doing it to the next group.
It's a fallacy of the innocent past is what it's called.
Exactly. It was never any better. The world, you know, it's never any better.
My problem isn't
better
with millennials. It's with anybody who is, I guess, willing to sit there in a pool of ignorance and not look to the past and say, we can learn from this.
Yeah.
And this
sure.
is what gives us perspective on the present. And, you know, young people have done that for a long time. It's not just millennials.
And we did, too. I mean,
right.
Oh,
I knew.
You kids with your Yo! MTV raps
yeah.
and your Nickelodeon. You're crazy.
Your rock and roll and your Dan Fogelberg.
You guys got it out of your
yeah.
system?
Okay.
All right, let's move on. The Rams, you know, they traded for Nick Foles in the offseason. And according to Rap Sheet, they are very interested and motivated to get a long-term extension done with the quarterback ahead of week one. This struck everyone immediately. You know, it was a surprise to see that the Rams would want to get deeper into a commitment with a player who's coming off a poor season, who really only has one good season of work under a different regime across the country. Wes, I'll start with you on this. How surprised were you to see this report that the Rams are looking to lock up Foles?
I was definitely surprised. I didn't know where's the fire? What's the hurry here? I mean, you got a guy who, by the middle of last year, the Eagles were already convinced that they were going to part ways with him, that he wasn't going to be their quarterback. He wasn't accurate enough. His footwork was a mess. He was a product of Chip Kelly's system. I don't see why the Rams think this guy's some franchise quarterback. It's more important to be right in your evaluation than to try to get a cheap deal.
This reminds me of the Andy Dalton negotiations last offseason when I just implored Dalton, go sign that contract. Like, you know, don't haggle over millions here or there. Go get it while you can. You might be Kevin Cobb.
According to Rappaport, one of the reasons or the primary reason they want to get the deal done now is they want to cash in while his value isn't too high. So they're working under the assumption that Foles is going to play at a high enough level that they're going to get burned in the back end on this, which is optimistic, sure, but still, it doesn't seem like good business. And if they do this, let's say they do give him an extension, it probably wouldn't be astronomical, but they lock into him long-term, and then he flames out, which is highly possible, and they are not a playoff team. This extension with a so-so season could be something that gets GMs and coaches fired.
Well, except they spent 3 years singing the praises of Sam Bradford. No matter what he did on the field, it was, this is our guy, this is our guy, this is what St. Louis does, and it didn't get anyone fired because it feels like Snead and Fisher can do no wrong. They can go 7-9 from now until the end of days, and there will be no change. It's almost Bengals-esque in the way that it is so static there. So it doesn't surprise me to see them backing the guy that they basically swapped out for Bradford.
If they did a deal, I'm sure it would be closer to the Dalton type where it's a 2 or 3 year, it's year by year without a ton of money. And it would be less than Andy Dalton. But to Chris's point, you want to see the whole Nick Foles in a Frank Cignetti PI offense throwing to a receiver group where Kenny Britt is the number one. Let's see if that works out a little bit first.
Sure.
Before giving the money.
Detective Frank Cignetti's on the case.
What? From what we've seen out of this coaching staff in this front office, do we have any reason to believe that we should trust their evaluations on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, I think one thing, Brian Schottenheimer, not that we've pounded on this guy before, but he's out the door, and there are multiple Rams players that have said, it's completely different with Cignetti. The offense looks different. We're more creative, et cetera, et cetera. I think Schottenheimer, in many stops, showed that he could not look at a quarterback and tell
Jeff
you what
Fisher
you had.
Jeff Fisher, not exactly known for dynamic
no,
offense.
No, he's not.
Cignetti, you're out of control. Give me a badge.
He is a badge.
I'll take your badge and your gun.
is that also TD's mom in your world? I don't know who that. I don't think that. I'm just
why
saying.
Why would you say that she would speak in such a masculine way?
Because your past impression was equally off target. I'm sure she is a very delightful woman.
Get married,
hey, can
you
do an impression of your mom for the show?
Not really, no.
Okay,
actually.
Cool.
It sounds
okay.
Nothing like that, though.
TD,
okay.
You gotta get married.
No. Way off.
All right, moving on. The Houston Texans, they have a real barn burner in the quarterback room, a great competition between Brian Hoyer, the former Browns quarterback, Cleveland Springsteen, and Ryan Mallett, who we know around here as Damashek's boy. According to one prominent beat reporter, or now columnist, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, he expects Hoyer to be the week one starting quarterback, and everything that apparently they're seeing, Hoyer looks comfortable in the offense. Bill O'Brien trusts him. He's going back their history in New England, and Ryan Mallett has not really impressed anyone so far. So, Mark, I'll start with you on this one. Are you surprised that Hoyer is potentially beating out or so far has outplayed Ryan Mallett? Or is this kind of what we should have expected?
Well, not really, because Hoyer has more starting experience and he's gone through more first-team reps than Mallett could ever have dreamed up at this point. But it was a year ago, just like we talked about a minute ago with Foles, that it was Cleveland talking about already wanting to get an extension for Hoyer in place. And 1 year later, he's on a different team and he's a bad training camp away from not even being a starter.
I think so, we had the same conversation about
exactly.
Hoyer.
Exactly. I think these Foles. Guys are a mix and match. Both of them are going to play this season no matter what.
But here's the thing. Mike Silver wrote a piece last week where he said O'Brien wants to get the starter announced early in training camp, possibly even before training camp, although that would be a surprise. That indicates to me he knows who his favorite is. And based on John McClain saying it, Tanya Ganguly of ESPN said, you know, Hoyer's been very consistent. And some of the things I listened to from O'Brien and a little buzz we're kind of hearing behind the scenes.
Whispers.
It would be surprising at this point if Brian Hoyer's not the week one starter. Sorry, Damashek, but I think Ryan Mallett's going to be the backup.
When you cover news on a daily basis, you start to develop a spidey sense. And yesterday was that you've got John McClain, who's been on the beat for, what, 30 or 40 years. He's very well-sourced in Houston. Tanya Ganguly, who's been on the beat for a few years. And they both have almost identical tweets that Hoyer looks like the guy. He's so much more natural in the offense, almost like they were being fed this information.
Exactly. They're not making this up out of thin air. Someone is telling them that, and they're now confident enough to send it to the public that he's going to get the job.
So I feel like I'm going to take this sandwich prop that I have with Damashek.
What was it?
12 starts for Mallett this year.
Oh, I wish I got on that.
Yeah, that was an easy one. Mallett might not make a single start.
The things that Sheck was saying about Ryan Mallett from about February until last month were outrageous.
Yeah, you could be arrested for some of them.
We'll see what happens. All right, moving on. So the Green Bay Packers have, you know, obviously one of the best offenses in football, if not the best, and there is reason for excitement. They could be even better this year with Aaron Rodgers behind center and some interesting players. Chris Wessling, you have the rookie Ty Montgomery, second-year wideout Devontae Adams, who is being called the MVP of the offseason program, and then six-year tight end Andrew Corliss, who is looking for a bigger role this season. Wes, you think that this could be a year where these guys become big-time players in an already great offense?
Well, records are broken, you know, on a semi-annual basis now in the NFL just because we're in the pass-heavy offense age. So, I mean, to me, why can't the Packers break Peyton Manning's records from a couple of years ago? You've got already one of the best offenses in the league. I think Mike McCarthy said, if we improve a little bit, we'll be the best offense pro football has seen. It's pretty high praise. And then that was before Devontae Adams came on like gangbusters this offseason. I went back and watched his tape and loved everything about it. Aaron Rodgers has been saying since the playoffs that this guy's a future number one receiver. You throw in Corliss, who he says is going to take the jump, I think.
It's
I think
making
copying
the
off
leap.
Or making
Come on.
The leap, yeah. And then Ty Montgomery, who the Spice Rack basically Rack basically compared him to some kind of Steve Smith Anquan Boldin hybrid.
For new listeners,
spicy.
This is some sort of Svengali in the mountains that does nothing but watch football film and feeds Wesseling his four pearls of
nugs
each year.
College.
And they're always right.
College.
Wes pays
players.
Him in granola. Keep him alive in Gatorade.
It's like Wes and I were talking about yesterday before watching the Cavs go down in massive flames that the Packers have proven to be the one team that, without signing free agents and bringing in other players that other teams develop, they develop their own and they just keep reloading. And this happens every year. There's this dark horse candidate in Green Bay that gets a lot of praise, and this time around it sounds like they found a number three who's going to set it up.
Yeah, I hope he's not this year's Cordarrelle Patterson, because I think Adams, the way Rodgers is talking about him in terms of his work ethic and his leadership, and he, you know, he likes his confidence. He thinks he carries himself like a number one receiver. I think they believe he's at the point where he can be as productive and maybe as impactful as Randall Cobb, and maybe even Jordy Nelson coming off hip surgery.
One thing we underestimate in the 21st century, because of the free agency era, is the value of stability and continuity. And you read old football books, and they'll tell you that offenses – dynasties happened basically because all of these players were playing with each other every year. And that, look at the Packers. I mean, Adams is the only one who hasn't been there longer than 2 years, really. I guess Richard Rodgers, the tight end, but Rodgers has been throwing to these guys for years. The offensive line's gelled for years. That's a big advantage going into the season.
One of the funnier aspects of going to that premiere yesterday was a lot of people that were there we know on some level. And people were giving Mark condolence messages about the Cavs, and it was clear Mark had checked out days earlier on this Cleveland reawakening, and you didn't really care that.
Well,
Cleveland
no,
lost.
Because, you know, not to be negative on the Cavs, I thought they fought very hard, but I just felt like it was over. Before yesterday's game, I was a zombie.
You
weren't
like emotionally attached to them.
Not yesterday.
You detached very quickly.
You were for like the end of game one through game four.
It was a little weird, yeah.
You were very invested. And then you realized it wasn't going to happen.
I did an emotional checkout, self-defense.
I don't blame you.
Finally, the Tennessee Titans released Sean Green, who came into the league with the Jets. And he was awesome as a rookie. I remember him running over Antonio Cromartie ducking to get away from Sean Green in the playoffs on a 50-yard touchdown.
I remember
run.
He tore through the Bengals defense like they weren't even there.
He
in
did.
The playoffs.
He was a hard downhill type runner, and he looked like a guy that was going to be good for many years. And he kind of just petered out, and he was basically an afterthought this season. There was no way they're going to keep him. So Sean Green on the street.
Mike Munchak once compared him to Eddie George when he came to Tennessee. He's going to be like our Eddie George.
Well, and we've
I
been here.
You weren't a liar. Maybe.
We've been here long enough where we were writing articles about he was going to be the Jets' bell cow, and then that never happened, and he never has been that guy since. And they've found younger players in Tennessee that they like a lot more than him.
Little spoiler for the next segment coming up.
Might be.
We might talk some Titans running game.
Whisper.
It's fitting that he was released by the Titans because he hasn't been relevant in a few years, and the Titans are just now starting to become relevant.
Oh.
It's like they're shedding their former identity.
So yeah. Getting rid of Green's like the last little bit they need.
Sean Green was like
to relevance.
He was like the perfect representative of the Titans.
Yes.
And he doesn't fit in with the new
He doesn't fit in with the
new
Mariota
world
Titans.
The six Titans fans that stuck with us through last season are loving this talk.
All right. That's what's happening. Let's move on and talk a little rookie ball in a segment we like to call Rookie Buzz or Rookie
Whispers.
Careless Whisper by Wham TD. Come
this
back.
This is a Sully special, actually. He
Sully.
Is, he is trying to get
Sully fighting to stay
Sully
relevant.
Sully knows the guilty feet have got no rhythm.
Look at Sully fighting for relevance.
That's
good
one
job,
millennial
buddy.
That knows
Don't
his music history.
Yeah, very good.
That is a jam. No question.
Oh, what a song. Anyway, yes, we're going to do some rookie careless whispers. And, you know, we'll start with Mark Sessler, who really, I mean, this guy, when you want to come to someone that's plugged in on the backfields of America and the depth charts and everything you want to know about running backs, you go to Mark Sessler. So, Mark, I believe your two choices are both running backs.
Yeah, let's start with David Cobb, the young Titans running back who Daniel Jeremiah thinks is a sneaky candidate for Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Hubba, hubba.
And it one day, you know, day after he said that, they go and they cut Sean Green, and Ken Wisenhunt basically said, we've got the young guys have looked good enough. We don't need him. And I do think that, you know, Sankey was Greg's boy last year, and maybe, you know, we can swing and miss twice on the same team in the same position group. But it sounds like Cobb gives that team what they need. He's advertised as a tough between-the-tackles guy who maybe isn't necessarily a super flashy guy on tape, but they want to be a tough running team. That's what they've tried to be for years. And, you know, they want Sankey to add weight and get bigger, but Cobb's already a bigger guy that can do it.
The only thing I wonder is, if they loved him so much, why did they take him in the fifth round? DJ talks about him as a sneaky offensive rookie of the year candidate, which is fine. Maybe he will be. Alfred Morris was a
sixth round pick.
They took a fullback before
him. It happens sometimes. But they clearly didn't think he was going to be a game-changing player if they took a fullback in front of him.
True.
I looked at his draft diary that we have on the site, and there was an AFC running backs coach that said, like, I hope we can get him. He can step right in and play because he runs tough and he knows how to pass protect. I have to wonder if that was Tennessee. But again, if it was, they really waited a while to get him. At the same time, like, Sankey he feels vulnerable because he's under pressure to come in and be something he wasn't all last season. It's like maybe he's just automatically going to be second string by the time the season starts.
Nothing special about him.
Whispers. That means do your next one.
We're going two in a row.
Oh, yeah. Back to back, baby.
Well, the second guy, you know, Duke Johnson from Cleveland, because I thought they already had their two young running backs. Greg, go ahead. What are you going to...
Whispers. I just wanted to do it.
A second duplicate sound effect. I like that. You know,
Mark, stay focused.
Sometimes it's in stereo.
I am trying to. There's multiple sound effects.
You have to stay focused during your thing. We could just go, whisper.
I will forge on.
At any time.
That, you know, Adam Kaplan from ESPN came away saying that Duke Johnson is all right, enough is enough. Enough is enough. He's been by far the most impressive running back. The Wilbert Montgomery, their running backs coach, said they're going to use him as a Gio Bernard type character.
Oh, well.
Where's Waldo type character? We'll see. I don't know. I like it. I am done. I'm not saying another word. Continue on.
Whispers. Chris Wesley.
When I started hearing about Amari Cooper a few weeks ago, Adam Kaplan had a report that he was the real deal in OTAs, and Eric Edholm of Yahoo spoke with an agent who said his client was in awe of Amari Cooper playing like a veteran. So he was coming on the scene. I reached out to Rap Sheet to figure out like what he's hearing, and he said, well, he knew that when Cooper came out of Alabama, they considered him the best and most ready NFL wide receiver they have ever produced, including Julio Jones. And then Rap Sheet, I believe, is fairly tight with Reggie McKenzie, the Raiders GM, who came over from Green Bay and tried to sign Randall Cobb as a free agent. The Packers signed him right before the deadline, but apparently McKenzie views Cooper as a bigger and more NFL ready Randall Cobb, which is pretty high praise. Cooper has been everything he was billed to be.
Maybe that came from them not getting Randall Cobb. That was one of their big free agent targets. You don't get him, you get Amari.
Get somebody better.
So who else you got?
Philip Dorsett. Philip Dorsett, I believe is how it's pronounced. Cool.
No, Dorsett.
That's right.
Was that TD's mom?
No. Oh. No.
I'm going to have to get my mom on the phone before this episode.
Yeah, TD, I apologize.
Clear off this nonsense.
TD, it's time for you to find your woman.
Oh, my gosh.
That is not correct.
What was that?
That is, now she's an Irish man? Gotcha.
Let's go ahead.
It's Mel Gibson in Braveheart, basically.
Always loved you. Always have.
Like I'm watching Rob Roy.
All right. Sorry. This is my fault.
Well, Philip Dorsett. You know he's going to come in and his speed is going to impress right away, and that happened. But when these fast guys come in, I remember when Chris Johnson came in 2008. The key is the coaches and the quarterback. Are they praising you for the right reasons? Dorsett's playing all the wide receiver positions. He's got a handle on them. He's in the right place. He's where he's supposed to be. Dante Moncrief wasn't doing all that stuff last year. Dorsett is. He's coming in, and Andrew Luck trusts him, and the quarterbacks and the coaches love him. I think that's a great sign.
They're going to be – if the Packers could break records this offseason, why can't the Colts? I mean, this season. Why can't the Colts? If Dorsett is as fun as we think he is and the run game is better, like they are a team that should be competing.
I would
be the leader in points.
Two reasons. The Packers' offensive line is considerably better than the Colts. And as much as I like Luck, he's not Aaron Rodgers.
Well, and how about the Colts' defense? Can they get off the field? I don't love the defense.
They also get to play.
That would help them.
That
would help them score points.
Yeah, exactly. They're lousy defense. Give up 40 points a game, and Luck is good.
Shootouts.
36.
Not if they're on the field for 40 minutes a game.
Whispers. I'll go next. The Chicago Bears used their seventh overall pick on Kevin White. Just June, of course, but there is an injury that he's dealing with that they're tight-lipped on, haven't said anything. Our own Stacey Dales tweeted that it was, quote, something to keep an eye on. And meanwhile, you know, when you talk about which guys hit the ground running, which guys need some time to get going, I found it somewhat notable that Jay Cutler said that White is competing for the fourth wideout spot right now behind Alshon Jeffrey, Marquise Wilson, and Eddie Royal. So, all rookies need to work their way up a depth chart, but this is a guy you expect to have an instant impact, and it seems like maybe he's a little slow out of the gates and his health isn't helping matters.
I think that's the John Fox factor, who just absolutely is disgusted by playing rookies.
Jay Cutler, once again, building a bridge to a great relationship with young receivers. Hey, you're worse than Marquise Wilson.
Eddie Royal, for Christ's sake.
But that's a fair point about Fox. Whether it's White's fault or not in the injury, we'll see if it's serious at all. Fox could get in the way, as he's got in the way of a lot of young players over the years. That could be a problem.
I'd be shocked if Kevin White isn't starting opposite Alshon Jeffrey when the season opens.
Wouldn't Adam Gase have some say in this?
Cutler also said Jeffrey has a chance to be like a true number one.
I thought he kind of was.
Well, he has to be.
I don't think he has been at this point.
Maybe well, no, but he has to be now.
Wait, you were saying on this very podcast 2 years ago that Jeffrey was better than Brandon Marshall.
He was playing better that year, and he was making more big plays. I guess I'm thinking more about last year. He wasn't a consistent guy you looked at each week and thought, that's the guy we got to worry
you
about.
You were Alshon Jeffrey's biggest fan.
Yeah,
well, it doesn't help when Cutler's the one setting you up with the football. I mean, that's a major issue.
Whispers.
I'm starting to get excited about the Jameis Winston experience. Big, strong, talented,
backup.
Comes onto an offense. Yeah, not a starter yet. Comes to an offense with two all-pro playmakers, some other interesting pieces. Crabman's going to do some work this year. And I also find it interesting that I've watched his press conferences and his meeting with the media. He's come off as impressive. I know, it kind of brought back some memories for me of when Cam Newton came out of college with all that baggage, and then he's been kind of a model citizen ever since he got to the league. Maybe the Bucks luck out and all their scouting work that he was an immature kid, but it would click. So far, so good. It seems like he's got the respect of his teammates. He's doing the right things. He's getting raves from the people covering the team that he's looking really good so far. I think so far, so good for Jameis Winston, who to me, is the favorite for offensive.
Well, if we're worried about John Fox managing the career of a young offensive talent, what do we think about Lovie Smith, who says he has a plan? I'm going to put him at number two and keep rolling him at number two snaps. What plan is this? Because this is not a guy that's rolled out a lot of successful offensive plans ever, not even one.
This is the most proven offensive coordinator and most capable offensive coordinator he's ever had. And that's not – Dirk Cutter is not that
more proven than Mike Martz? Super Bowl winning offensive coordinator Mike Martz.
Well,
architect of the greatest show on earth, Mike Martz.
How's what
Mike,
era though?
How's Mike Martz done since then? But that's fair. He's not as proven as Mike Martz. Most of the Bears offensive coordinators, and there were
Mike Tice.
There were a lot of them. weren't really guys that had just come from a very similar and positive situation. I'm giving a little credit to Cutter because Smith's not going to be involved. I think we've learned that. He's like a Rex Ryan type that's just has no clue and hopes some other guy does the offense for him.
If Lovie Smith has a plan involving a quarterback, I want nothing to do with that plan.
Oh. Why is my whisper
this is petering out?
Well, the podcast is coming to a close, and, how many whispers can a man have before it's his final breath?
Whisper. That's strong.
All right, give him a little music, too. He seems to be needing it right now.
Yeah. How about Marcus Mariota? We might as well stick with the top quarterbacks. I think if I was reading between the lines of all the top players that were taken in the draft, including Winston, I think Mariota's made the strongest, most immediate impression with everyone around that team saying, I know they're going to say it about the new franchise quarterback, but the position coaches, the players, the reporters, everyone's saying that they're far more impressed than they expected with how he's jumped out of the gates in terms of taking charge of the team, learning the offense, and zipping some accurate passes in practice.
Devil's advocate?
It's,
I would love to go back to 2011 June and see what they were saying about Jake Locker.
It's fair because you hear this stuff about every one of these guys.
He was struggling to get playing time. Mariota is a guy that they're putting in right away. That's the number one guy right away. He's taking charge. Locker was sort of the opposite.
But my point more being that usually these high-end guys, everyone's in love with them initially.
But you just talked about Winston.
Yeah, but I said that they, you know.
I hear you, but
I didn't just talk about his actual ability on the field, that he seemed to be carrying himself in a good way after being troubled in college.
But Locker's a good example. And Manziel and Ponder and a lot of guys, those guys were known as being inaccurate in practice. They did take a long time to kind of learn the system and everything. It just, I guess it's the level of that they think he's ready to go, and more the approach that he's had in the building. People were worried about the leadership, all that.
Well, remember a couple months ago when we're huddled over our TVs watching Winston go through his quarterback thing where they're swinging a broom at him?
Oh, yeah.
What's going on right now is not a whole lot removed from that, honestly. So let's get the pads on and let's see it against a real defense. It's all wind right now, and we know it.
Whisper.
Hey, Duke Johnson sucks.
Hey, how about that's not what we're that's not the whispers we're hearing, Greg. Let's be accurate about what the whispers are saying.
Whispers.
I don't even remember who is my second guy.
I don't know. It's
I thought you've
one
already done like
he's an animal.
Guys.
Oh,
Devontae Parker.
We covered that.
Devontae Parker. The point with him is that everyone is expected that he's going to come back and make a big impact. This is a foot surgery that he's going to be out for 3 to 4 months. So I just wanted to kind of put this out there that he might not be ready for the start of the season, and he's going to be way behind in terms of learning things in training camp. And this foot surgery, he's gotten a lot of buzz, like, okay, everything was great before the foot surgery, and just putting that to the side, it's a pretty big deal to get foot surgery. He wouldn't have been drafted in the first round if he had foot surgery. That's one of the most problematic injuries that you can possibly have, and it makes me a little worried if you're a Dolphins fan about the improvement of that.
How about if you're Devonta Parker's mom? Don't go say, I don't want to play my son playing for the Browns. I don't want him playing in Cleveland. How about you get on the field in Miami first?
Is that what Devonta Parker's mom sounds like?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that. No, I did not shift into one of your fantastic female impressions right there.
Whispers.
That's it.
I'm throwing out another one.
All right.
Oh,
all right.
No.
How about Delvin Bro? B-R-E-A-U-X. Now, that is a name
Brooks.
That you want. That is a New Orleans Saints name, if I ever heard one. I've been to a Cajun crawfish festival in Bro Bridge, Louisiana. I mean, that is a Cajun word, a Cajun name.
You mad, bro?
Guy no one ever heard of, and he's their starting slot cornerback right now out of nowhere, passing the immortal Kyle Wilson.
I did hear about him. You know why I heard about him? He shut down Daron Carter in the CFL playoffs. Like, just locked him down.
D-Bro.
On the biggest stage in the world.
The CFL playoffs.
Physical cornerback who's coming off of 2 years in the CFL. Watch out for him. He counts as a rookie.
Dan, or Greg here, who, you know, this is not well advertised, but along with being a Patriots fan, a Saints fan, and now that the Patriots, there's been an offseason a little bit rocky, they've come off a big Super Bowl, getting back in his D-Bro mode. He loves D-Bro, cornerback, slot corner guy, and he's getting back on the Saints. They look good this season.
He just bailed on the Saints after the Super Bowl, just like he's bailing on the Patriots after the Super
Bowl. He will shift right back into Saints mode if they get hot. Watch.
Once you get a little success, you get bored. You move on.
That's ugly. All right, that's it for Rookie Whispers, the careless edition. And that is it. Let's play out with this. That's it for today's edition.
Before we do that,
silly me.
You know the
deal. I forgot. Okay, go ahead.
All right.
You were doing so well, TD.
Can I just say, before you do this,
yeah,
I have a feeling that I'm pulling for Mark here. I got a good feeling about today.
Good.
I'll tell you this, Mark. For once, didn't come last.
Wow.
That goes to Dan and his horrible mother impressions.
TD, come on, man.
Horrible, and I got to go with Greg. I mean, he was enthusiastic with Rick Whispers. He was jumping on the sound effects. He was ready to go, so I got to go with Greg.
Great choice.
Good job, Greg. Now, before we leave, I have a voicemail from my mom. So
I
want to hear what she sounds like.
Very good.
So
I think you deserve the MVP today, TD.
Well, maybe. Maybe we'll see. But here's my mom calling me and singing for some reason.
Somebody loves you, I want you to know.
Aw.
Deep within my heart, she wants you to know.
That's
what a sweet woman.
Oh, and
can
like
I just
Billie
say
Holiday.
Something? That was very nice, and you know, I'm happy you have such a great mother. But that didn't sound too far off from
us. Yes, it did.
To be honest.
Somebody loves you. You need to know that I always loved you.
And I always will.
In his mind, he sounds like he thinks he's doing the great impression. I was like that. A young me was like that was Snoop Dogg. I thought I sounded like Snoop Dogg.
A true young Kobe.
Your mom, young Snoop Dogg and young Kobe.
That was beautiful. Good job.
Your mom just put moms everywhere on blast. Who got a voicemail from their mom like that today?
That's pretty good. All right, let's get out of here. Congratulations, Greg. We'll be back on Thursday with our big win, Wes's Toaster. Skill and Valor, spectacular. Maybe Connor Orr will be on the phone, too, so get ready for that.
Are you kidding me?
This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, TD behind the glass. Till Thursday.